better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3535, if man is still alive. Some know where that's from, some don't, but I'm sure if you searched for it, you would be able to find it. We are not up to the year 3535, but we are up to the episode 3535. And I thought it'd be cool to do something today we haven't really done for a while. And that's just to have a chat about liberty. What is liberty? What does the word actually mean? What does the premise actually mean? Why do most of the people that use terms like liberty or freedom, emancipation, anything like that today, why do most of those people actually have no idea what liberty is? They just don't know. They have no clue. If you actually ask them to define liberty, they can't. If they do define it in a way that makes sense, like they say something that you're like, yeah, that kind of seems like liberty. The minute you test what they said, they'll fail their own test. Meaning if you say, so shouldn't we be allowed to do this thing? And you just pick something that you know they personally object to. Not all, especially in this audience, and I am generalizing today. So I know a lot of you guys in my audience are more libertarian, lowercase l, or anarchist, honestly, than most in society. But in general, the average person will give you a reasonable approximation of what liberty means. But then when you say, can Bill go over here and do this thing that you know that Tom objects to? And Tom's like, no, we got to have order, whereas some other bullshit they'll make up. Even if the thing that Bill wants to do totally fits in Tom's definition. Why? Why? Because we're confused. We don't know what liberty is. We don't know what freedom is as a society, as a whole. We've been tricked by people that use these words all the time. Here's a couple ways that terminology has been bent like this. The Patriot Act. You know, how many things are marketed to our community, right? When I say I'm talking permaculturists, regenerative agriculturists, survivalist preppers, liberty-oriented people, etc. How many things are marketed to us is for patriots? I mean, there's literally companies that's, you know, Patriot Supply or forpatriots.com or some other bullshit, right? It's just pandering, right? But if you think of, like, what does government do with that term? They create something called the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act was one of the biggest infringements on the rights of America's citizens that's ever happened. Do you want to know how the Patriot Act passed? Like the numbers behind it? So the Patriot Act passed in 2001. The House voted 367 for, 66 against. Of those 357 who were for, 196 votes. Almost a majority in of itself. Not quite, but almost a majority in of itself came from Republicans. So tell me all the horrible things the Democrats are doing. I'll completely agree with you. But then explain that shit. The Senate was 98-1. So somebody didn't show up that day, right? 98-1. 48 yes votes from Republicans. 48 yes votes. I think Rand Paul was a senator at the time, and I think he was the one Republican senator to say no to that. I think. I could be wrong. That doesn't even really matter. You see what I'm saying? Collectively, we talk about freedom, and we take something that's supposed to protect us from terrorists who want to come hurt us from overseas, and 90% of the verbiage in the bill that passes, which is like 1,000 pages and nobody read it, actually applies more to U.S. citizens than anybody else. And then we sit around and we throw out words like patriot and freedom and liberty as though we know what they mean. Imagine a Star Trek-type universe. And you get on a ship like the Enterprise and you cruise through interstellar space and you have the universal translator and you meet another species and they seem to be very similar to us and have common ideals. And let's imagine in this fake world that we actually know what the fuck freedom and liberty mean. And they keep using those terms as well. But the universal translator is kind of glitchy a little bit. And when you finally realize why, you find out that they don't use the word to mean, like, there's a breakdown in the translation. And so in some ways, this would be worse than not understanding each other. When you don't understand each other, okay, you know you don't understand each other. And so you work really hard to understand each other. When you're using the same words for different things and different meanings, and when there's more than two parties involved, you get really confused really fast. Bluntly, I will tell you, my premise I'm coming for today is the average American doesn't have the fucking square root of fuck all of an idea as to what liberty actually means or what freedom actually means. The person who is a crazy liberal drone knows as much about liberty as a lot of people that are out flying the flag in their front yard screaming, USA, USA, America, right? I'm sorry. It's true. And I'll explain all of it today. And the reason I'm doing it is so you can figure out how to have liberty in your own life. How you figure out how to have it in your own life. Because the lesson you'll learn today, hopefully, is that freedom and liberty can only be defined for a person by the person doing the defining. I can no more define liberty for you than you can for me. And until we accept that, we can't even have a conversation about it, let alone pursue it to our own ends, which is what we're going to talk about today, because I'm much bigger on solutions than problems, right? We must define problems to find solutions, but then we focus on what? The solution. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day today. Sponsor of the day, number one today, the Wealth Steading Podcast with John Pugliano. John is one of us, guys. He is a true prepper, lifestyle designer, ham radio operator, but he's also a really great investment manager. He has a podcast called Wealth Steading, the Wealth Steading Podcast at wealthsteading.com. You should check it out. He does these episodes about once a week, sometimes every 2 weeks. Most recent episode just came out on August 3rd, a couple days ago, called Trading the Fear and Greed Cycle. And boy, are we hitting that right now. The global markets are in sharp decline. Like, it's not just the U.S. stock market that's down. The Japanese market's down. A bunch of emerging markets are down. Real estate's in trouble all over the world right now. And this is where everybody freaks out. But when you keep your head, like the Rudyard Kipling poem, if you keep your head when everybody around you is losing theirs, you'll be a man, my son, but you'll also be able to capitalize on the blood in the bloodbath. See, the time that everybody runs away from the market is the time everybody should be buying into the market, but they have no money because they haven't prepared themselves adequately. Start listening to John. You'll do a better job of that, I promise you. Next up today, KnifeKits.com, a company that's been sponsoring our podcast for how long? Oh, that would be 15 years, folks. 15 years we've been working with KnifeKits.com. If you have ever thought about making a knife of your own, KnifeKits.com is the place to start. They have everything from exotic handle materials to basic everyday stuff to kits where you just get started, cool mosaic pins, holster material, kydex material, all that stuff and more. You'll find it all at KnifeKits.com. And if you are a custom bladesmith, you're looking for those exotic materials, raw materials, Damascus steel, whatever, then you already know Knife Kits is a great place to find that stuff. So check them out today at KnifeKits.com. And I want to give you an announcement about tomorrow real quick. For the morning part of the show, I will be doing my first Tuesday coffee chat with John Willis and Nicole Sauce. And that will be the TSP live stream and podcast episode for tomorrow. We'll talk about a variety of things based on some of the stuff John's been up to. I think we'll probably talk a little bit about the Trump assassination attempt and all this crazy shit that's going on. Like, I don't know, being on the eve of World War III over freaking Iran and Israel. Like, I feel like we did this already when I was a kid, and maybe we should stop redoing things that are bad ideas. So we'll be talking about that. But I'm also then at 1 p.m., going to be on a live stream where Dr. Ken Berry is going to be interviewing me about food production. And he has decided to call this Feed Yourself or Suffer. And this is on his OB Farms YouTube channel, which if you just look for OB Farms, you'll find that on YouTube. And if you go to his live streams, you can set up to be notified of when we go live. So you can catch Ken putting me on the other side of the chair for a moment and interviewing me. All right, so let's dig into this. If you saw the thumbnail for today's episode, it is an AI rendering of me, and I actually think they did a pretty good job. I'm not going to say perfect or anything, but the AI tool did a pretty good job of my likeness. And behind me is like this ominous looking robot. And I actually didn't make that thumbnail for today's episode. I had made it a while ago. And I did that because I was going to do a show about artificial intelligence that I never did. And I was thinking about today's episode, and I was going through some of the artwork that I had done up for myself there. And this one came up. And when it came up, I thought, well, that's not going to work. And then I thought about it a little bit more and thought that's actually kind of perfect for today. Because when we talk about liberty and freedom in our society today, there's only two ways we can talk about it, the real way and the fake way. The fake way is America, rah, 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 USA, USA, the bald eagles flying around the stadium or whatever, you know. We're the best because we can blow shit up or some other feel-good catchphrase. Or we can talk about it from the standpoint of actually developing liberty and freedom in your life as a struggle. And that the main thing that we are going to struggle against in our lives when it comes to building liberty and freedom is the state itself. The very nation that asks us to pledge our allegiance to its flag and our allegiance and loyalty to its missions, that claims to have it out to protect us, that claims that they are the arbiters of liberty and freedom and justice, right? They're the ones that are in the way. Most of the things that people want to do in this world that are not harmful to others, the thing that holds them back the most in getting it done, I'm going to be fair to the state here. Number one isn't the state. State's number two. Number one is their own excuse-making, inaction, pathetic freaking outlook on life. Number two is the state. So the people that get past that and say, I know what I want to do and I'm willing to sacrifice and work for it, and you can get a lot of it done. Don't get me wrong. Or there'd be no point to this episode today. If you couldn't overcome it, right, then it wouldn't be worth really talking about because then we wouldn't have a solution. It doesn't mean it's not a problem. So permaculture. We say the problem is the solution, so we have a particular weed that's kind of persistent in our system. Turns out chickens like to eat it. So when we weed, we also feed the chicken, and hence the problem has become a solution. It doesn't mean the weed's not a problem, and it doesn't always mean that the solution is as simple as that, does it? Or even if we enact the solution, that it's actually sufficient to fix the problem. And that's where we are. And so that robot over my shoulder in that image, you know what that represents to me? The state. That's me minding my own fucking business, for those that can't see it, drinking a coffee, pissed off because I got Big Brother over my shoulder that wants to know what I'm doing and get into my business. That's why I chose that today. And we have to start out, I think, today by saying, well, what is liberty? What exactly is it? What is freedom? And I decided I would take a shot at a generic definition that most freedom-minded people could agree upon so that I could define it collectively, okay? Which I'm just saying is really difficult to do, but it would be the ability to do anything you want so long as you don't interfere with the rights or property of others. If I don't harm you, take from you, steal your property, mess with you, bother you in any way, I leave you alone, I go over here and do my thing, even if you don't agree with it, then I should be able to do it. Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff, right? The non-aggression principle. I think most people, if you phrase it that way, if they're reasonable people that even try to mean what they say when they talk about freedom and liberty, would go, yeah, that's a pretty good definition. I'd like to know from the people here in the live stream, we got like well over 100. I think on YouTube, we got well over 100, let alone the other sources. But YouTube, you're the guys that I can see. Do you agree with that definition? Just give me a Y for yes and N for no. Let me read it again. The ability to do anything you want so long as you don't interfere with the rights or property of others. Does that sound like a reasonable definition of freedom and liberty, yes or no? Let's get those coming into the live stream there. Okay, but let's, I'm going to assume that we're going to do pretty well with that little impromptu poll there. Yes, yes, yes. Here they come. They're all yeses. They're coming in quick now. Mark, Ghoulie, Josh, Fisher Ken, Fred. Thanks, guys. And just keep them coming, right? Yes, Mark's coming in now, right? Other Mark, Bonnie, Michael. Everybody's agreeing. Yes, okay. So you tell somebody that, they're like, yeah. And then you give them an example of something that you know that they oppose, even though it meets the definition. Take a person who's opposed to drugs. Well, does that mean that a person over here minding their own business should be able to get high on basically any drug they want as long as they're not harming or hurting anybody or stealing from anybody? A whole shitload of them will say, well, no, not that. We have to protect people. Well, from themselves? Am I not allowed to harm myself if I choose to? And they'll say, and even if they say no, if you start going through activities that can harm you, they'll say, well, no, well, they should be able to do that. Well, you get hurt doing that. Should be able to ride motorcycles. Yeah. Look at the morbidity rate of motorcycle versus automobile accidents, right? If we just didn't let anybody ride a motorcycle, there'd be a lot more people alive. But you can't do that because it's not right, because they have a right to, so they don't have a right to friggin' smoke pot. Or I don't care if it's crack. I don't think you should, but I don't want goons to come arrest you for doing it. But most people will say, yeah, we have to do that. And the person that says no to that will come, if you just keep going through, like I guarantee if you pick 10 issues and 5 that generally the right oppose and 5 that generally the left oppose, but you make a serious concerted effort to make sure that they meet the definition, and then you find people, and once you get them to agree to the definition, you say, would you just tell me if you kind of are predisposed to be the right or the left? A lot of people tell you they're independent. So who's the last 2 people you voted for president if you vote? And that'll tell you that the independents usually lie. They're not really independents after all. And then give them those 5 things from that side, that oppositional side. And I bet you 3 or 4 of them, they'll say, no, we can't have that. We can't have that. Why? Because they don't actually understand what liberty and freedom are. See, this is the problem. What most people think liberty and freedom are is freedom to do. Right? The ability to do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt anybody else, as long as I also agree with it. Now, how do we get here? Right? Well, we got here by turning away from the only valid, legitimate reason you could ever come up with to establish a state. There's only one. There's only one legitimate reason you could come up with under our definition that we've all now agreed to. Right? We've all now agreed the ability to do anything you want so long as you don't interfere with the rights or property of others. We've agreed to that. Okay. So under that system, there's only one valid purpose for the state. What is it? To protect and preserve the rights and freedoms of the individual. Full stop. Done. But what about groups of people? Are groups of people not individuals? What about black rights? Are black people not individuals? What about trans rights? Are trans people not individuals? What about white people? Are white people not individuals? What about women's rights? Are women not individuals? I mean, even if you can't answer the simple biological 5th grade science question, what is a woman? And you should be able to. Even if you can't, is not whatever the hell you say this group is, made up and composed of individuals? Well, absolutely. So do you know what school of thought emphasizes the liberation of the masses over the liberation of the individual? Do you know what political ideology says the way to liberate the individual is to first liberate the masses? That would be communism, classic Marxist communism. Stalin literally said this. This is a quote from Stalin, a paraphrase quote, because I don't memorize Stalin's quotes. But he basically said, and he was totally correct in saying this, just not which side you should pick. He said, when it comes to anarchists, their belief is that the emancipation of the individual is necessary for the emancipation of the masses. But the communists, the socialists, tells you that to emancipate the individual, you must first emancipate the masses. Now, I want you to think I want you to think for a second here. Okay? Think like a state. You're the state. The state, to justify its existence and its expansion, its ever-growing expansion, needs what? Problems. If you are a state, a federal centralized governmental force, and you wish to grow, you need problems. You don't need solutions. Solutions mean we don't need you to do this anymore. You need problems. If the solution is the emancipation of the individual, right, if that's the goal, then all one has to do is leave people the fuck alone and you're done. And when somebody goes and attacks the individual, defend them from the attack and say, you can't take Tom's shit, fuck off. That's all you have to do. What about roads? Different discussion, but I'm pretty sure that people that want roads will pay for roads so they can use roads. Pretty sure of that. I mean, it works for everything. How do I get food? I buy it. I want a road. I'll pay to use it. We can figure that out somewhere else, right? We could probably even come up with a way that won't make all my anarchist friends happy, but it would make me a lot happier than we are. Well, we could have public roads paid for with public funds, but we just do it in a way like where all the money comes from people that actually use the road. But what about people that order shit in the mail? Well, the people that deliver the shit on the road will build that into the price, and hence they will pay for it. So I think we can work that out. I'm pretty sure since private companies build cars and trucks, which are incredibly complex things, that we can figure out how to build a flat thing that goes from point A to point B without stealing from people. I'm pretty sure we can do that. But if we want to emancipate the individual and the only purpose of government is to defend the rights of individuals, and we see that all individuals have the same rights, then government needs to be a bitty tiny government. Never needs to grow. In fact, the minute it started growing, it would delegitimize itself if that was its goal. But what if you want to liberate the masses? See, this is like a war on drugs, right? Are there still drugs? Yeah, well, then we still need a war on them. We've always been at war with East Asia, right? Right? We have to have something that we can never achieve victory over. Because if you say, I'm going to put this government plan in place to destroy this threat, and the threat is destroyed, we don't need the thing anymore. So if you say, I want to liberate the masses, you can point to people anywhere and say, those people aren't liberated. You can, like, which one is better for class warfare? Emancipation of the individual. Well, this person is LGBTQ PR XYZ. So what? They're an individual, right? Yeah, they have rights. Fuck off. Done. But as soon as you say we have to emancipate the masses, see how brilliant? You see, the problem people have with Marx is they think he was stupid. They think he was stupid. You can be evil and not stupid. These people are not stupid. Now, they are great at creating stupidity and harnessing stupidity of the masses. But the people behind the power, these people are not dumb. Right? Even the ones that we can look at and go, okay, well, that person's pretty stupid, Kamala Harris. Yeah, but they are tools of the people that are actually in charge. And they're actually, most politicians, no matter how stupid they sound, they're good at what they do. I mean, I can say whatever I want about how stupid AOC is, but she's a congresswoman and I'm not, right? Right? I can talk shit about how stupid Maxine Waters is, and she is, but she's in Congress and I'm not. Now, I don't actually want to be. But I'm not going to tell you I would be if I wanted to be. Like, I would be able to pull it off. You have to be a shrewd, calculating, ass-licking fuck to become a high-level member of our federal government. You really do. I can't do it. They can. I can't say that everything that they say is stupid. They can be stupid people, but they're good at what they're good at. So how do we find a resolution between two people when they disagree? Well, today, what do? We make a phone call. We call 911. We call a cop. We sue. We file a grievance with the union. There's some bureaucracy that gets invoked to settle a problem. So it's a pretty difficult society to build liberty in when every time anybody does anything you don't like, there's someone you can call and try to make them do what you want. I mean, I think one of the things that would be helpful to people that not everybody's going to do or even can do, because it takes a certain amount of effort to make the thing successful, but to run a successful online community where you have moderator privileges, where you can just ban somebody and shut somebody off and see how hard it is when somebody's just a pain in the ass and you don't like them, but they haven't broken any rules, but you could just get rid of them. It's pretty tempting. Or run for office. See, I ran for office back in the early 2000s as a libertarian for the Texas House. And I didn't really take it seriously. I ended up doing fairly well, given the circumstance. I beat the Democrat. I beat the Democrat in the race. But even though I didn't really expect to win or think I was, I found myself, when somebody would say something in public, censoring myself. Immediately, I was not the same man. In fact, I didn't like it enough that I've several times been offered the ability to run for office with some serious backing and turned it down, because I remember what it did to me, that little brief flirtation with the idea. You know, I ran as a libertarian because the LP asked me to, and the LP wasn't crazy yet back then. They hadn't gone woke like they have now. And it was just to make a point, make sure there was somebody on the ballot. And so that's why I did it. And yet it's, and I was thinking, well, what if I had people funding me? Because that's what was eventually offered. Oh, there was my attorney that I had with my business with Neil Franklin, the guy named Jeff, put his hand on my shoulder and said, "You want that seat? I know who we stuck in down there. So he's up in North Dallas. I'm down in South Mansfield. Like, this is night and day for those who don't know the DFW area, right? This is like way more than two towns over, totally outside of his area of influence, right? And we can make that happen for you." And I'm like, well, what if I've got all these people putting in campaign funds and stuff like that for $1,000 a month job, right? And I want to win so I can make a difference. Like, I saw right away what it was really all about. I wish all of you could experience it. And I would say it'd be interesting for you. Just imagine for like the next week that you're running for political office, a significant office, like a state senator or something like that, and that you have a real chance to win. And there's people that you mostly agree with, but in some very meaningful ways disagree with, who are funding you. And you're trying to get elected, and you might be elected in November if you play your cards. And just when shit happens with your neighbors, like when your neighbor's yelling at your kid because he's playing basketball too loudly next door on your property, and you start thinking about handling that different because it could affect your vote that you'll get, it changes you. And I think in a good way, if you're not doing it for real and you don't really want power. But in our society, when two people disagree, we bring in somebody else. We bring in some form of force that we don't have to actually do anything for. In fact, in all my years, almost every time I've ever had like a neighbor make a phone call because of something that was going on, like once I was bothered because I was firing an air rifle in a backyard in a suburb, which was totally legal, by the way, and I wasn't hurting anything. I've had people, you know, when I was younger, we used to have parties and stuff because the music's too loud or whatever, right? No one ever like came over and said, "Hey, Jack, look, man, could you turn that down a little bit?" Because the answer to that would probably be, "Dude, I didn't realize it was so loud. That's fine. Yeah, we'll do it. Is that good?" Right? As long as it's a reasonable request, yeah, sure. Right? Or the lady with the air rifle, I would have simply explained to her, "Look, it's not going to hurt you. Here's why it can't hurt you. Here's why you don't have to worry about it. And there's nothing that you really can do. And so I'm going to keep doing this, but I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I hope if you have any more questions about it, let me know." But no, what happened in all those instances, and I've seen it happen to friends, somebody makes a phone call, and the police or an inspector or somebody shows up, and do they ever tell you who ratted you out, who called in? No, right? So you're very comfortable putting this process in motion and basically pointing a gun at your neighbor because you don't like something they're doing. Because this is something you need to understand. When you call the state and they send anybody, including like a property inspector or a code inspector or whatever, you know, even though he doesn't carry a gun directly, you're pointing a gun at somebody. Most likely response is going to be a cop carrying a gun and a taser and pepper spray, maybe has a dog, 50 other cops you can call in to beat your ass. And you're doing that because you don't like what the other person's doing. That's not how liberty works. So how would it work in a society where the rights of individuals are protected? Well, then you would need to at least make an attempt to resolve differences between individuals the way we used to. I mean, I'm thinking back to like when I was a teenager in the 80s, like if somebody was too loud, like the neighbor just knocked on the door and said, hey, man, it's pretty loud. Like it was like that. The bigger the state got, the easier it got to invoke power on somebody else's behalf, the less people resolve differences for themselves. So we're at a point now where everybody's a fucking Karen, right? Everything that happens anywhere that anybody doesn't like, first thing they do is call the police, including the lunatic left that want to defund the police. What is the first thing they do when they get smacked down? These guys are running through fucking city streets, burning shit, smashing shit, whatever. Somebody finally gets the ass, has had enough of one of these people. Some big meat hook guy, right? Some dude like with the nickname Earth with one eyebrow that goes over both his eyes, about 6'6", grabs one of these skinny little fucks by the neck and hurdles them to the ground and says, knock it the fuck off. What do? Where do they go? Straight to the police that they're protesting. Everybody does it. Because we live in a non-free society. In a free society, you would not have a button to push every time you didn't like what somebody else was doing. Because what did we agree the definition was? Being able to do whatever you want as long as you're not not impinging on the rights and freedoms and property of others. So you wouldn't be able to do that. You'd have at least some obligation to work things out. So how do we forget what freedom was all about? Arguably, the United States of America is the freest modern nation that's ever existed. I would definitely say there were some Native American societies that were more free. I know they like to use the term nation, but as a modern nation state, I don't think most of them were. And I would say that, you know, your North American, South American Native societies that really rose to the level of a state, they were far less free than the United States that, you know, we had in the 1800s. I mean, they were far less free than the United States we had in the 1980s. There's some pretty big atrocities committed in the New World before any white people got here, if you want to put it that way. So the United States, if we look at modern nations as what we see as a nation with a sitting government and a large footprint and clearly defined borders and laws and code, the United States as it existed in its infancy, even its toddlerhood, freest nation ever. I'll go out and say that. Really was. So how do we go from that to a country where in many ways we're less free than a lot of countries you look as totalitarian shitholes today? I guarantee you the average rural Russian gives less of a fuck about Putin and their central government than most people in America do about Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, D.C., Richmond, north of Richmond. Way less. The federal government doesn't even exist for those people out in rural Russia, mainly because of access. They're too hard to get to. I'm just saying, we don't have that much freedom in our country today. How do we get there? I think part of it is, and this is a cancer we'll never get over, and there's people, because problems equal opportunity if you're the state, don't want us to get over it, so they keep reopening the wound. But we started out with freedom for some, not all. This is a black mark on our collective society that we can never make go away like it didn't happen. And I am talking about slavery, but I'm also talking about various forms of segregation, ways different groups of immigrants were treated, and not all the immigrants that were treated really, really bad were, you know, what we think of as minorities today. Ask the, especially some of these Irish roots in America go back way, way back to like the time of like the Molly Maguires, where I grew up in Pennsylvania, about that. They'll explain to you how wrong you are. Or people like from my background that came in from Eastern Europe, Poland, Ukraine, Romania, etc. Like my family came from the Ukraine via Romania. And when I was able to actually find their immigration documents through Ancestry, they were all listed as Romanians speaking Ukrainian. And the reason was that the people doing the intake at Ellis Island didn't speak either language. They knew where the ship came from. And there was someone there bright enough to go, that's not Romanian, that's Ukraine. Okay, then we'll just say they're Romanians and they speak Ukrainian. Right. But that's where we started out. Like my family and the people that grew up in that area, in the coal region, They were abused. Company store level shit abused. I mean, Tennessee Ernie Ford had the old company store song, right? And he's talking about, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, but Pennsylvania, man, it was the same shit. The Reading Company was the company store, baby. They were. So we started out with this idea that there were simply people that were lesser because they weren't us. And this is not unique that, like, white people treat black people this way, right? Go anywhere in the world at any time in history, the dominant power viewed anybody that wasn't one of us as lesser and took them as slaves and servants and made them second-class citizens. It's always been this way with people because we're easily divided, and people that crave power know they need a state to truly have power. And once you have the state, then you have to justify extorting people. And the easiest extortion to get your society to sign off on is, but it won't affect you. How do they sell you a tax cut? But your taxes won't go up. Right? Like, we're going to raise taxes on the rich. We're just going to, like, you're not rich. Well, if you look at the plan, they're going to raise everybody's fucking tax. But they tell you it sounds great. Well, why would I care? Why do you care if somebody steals your neighbor's shit is what they're saying. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. Well, they stole from my neighbor. That's all right. But see, you get into one of the two primary forms of cognitive dissonance then, which means you'll be miserable. So most people, when they hear cognitive dissonance, they think, well, that's like when you believe A is true and somebody gives you proof that A is false. And then your brain can't accept that you're wrong, so you justify it with perception bias, a normalcy bias. And it hurts that you're trying to convince yourself that A really still is true when you were just given that's one form of cognitive dissonance. The other, though, is where you're acting disparagement from what you really believe, think, and are. Meaning you know that theft is wrong, even if they're stealing from somebody other than you. If you saw somebody trying to rob your neighbor on the street, you would intervene. But when they say, well, your neighbor makes a lot more money than you, so we're going to tax him higher, you're like, okay. And you'll never be in congruency with your own moral code that way, and you'll always be miserable, and miserable people want change, and change is always the avenue that government uses, even if it's more of the same, to get you to agree to shit. Always. So we started out with freedom for some instead of freedom for all. Then we became comfortable. We actually ended up, we got comfortable because our system was so good despite that initial flaw that it largely did lead to pretty much equal treatment for most people. That doesn't mean there's no racism or sexism or misogyny or anything. There will always be prejudice, okay? But overall, by the 1990s, there weren't many people left that were like, yeah, we need to worry about the plight of so-and-so in this country. It was always somebody in some other country. Great way to start foreign wars. But, I mean, I had black friends. You guys probably did. If you're white, if you were a black kid, you probably had white friends. Everybody got along. Nobody really saw much of a problem. And then we had to rebirth all that shit because the government's like, fuck, we want advancement. We need to divide these people again. So we became so comfortable with freedom that we took it for granted, and we let them turn it back on us. Then we asked the state, when it started to get uncomfortable, state, will you please preserve our comfort? I am uncomfortable. I don't like what he's doing over there, and I don't like what she said. And that sounded like a microaggression, and this person says they're a woman, so they must be, even though they're clearly a friggin' 6'2" guy with a dong long enough to rub their kneecap with, right? I want to be comfortable with what I think is right. Do whatever it takes so I can stay comfortable. And we all did this, not just the lunatics, right? We all thought, hey, my way is the way that makes sense to me. I must be the majority because obviously I'm right. And most people must see things the way that I see things. So state, fix it. And the state's like, sure, no problem. We'll take care. You want us to see to your comfort? No problem. You have to pay a little bit more in taxes. But remember, only the rich people. Okay, boom, everybody's paying more. Hey, why did the price of shit go up? Because when you tax the fucking company that makes it, they don't just pay the tax. They add it to the cost of goods sold. They maintain their profit margin, and you, the customer, actually pay the tax. I feel uncomfortable. Make me comfortable. We'll make up some words like the Inflation Reduction Act and give you another comfortable thing so you'll feel better. And everybody gets more and more miserable, more and more alienated toward each other, and more angry with each other. And then they all say liberty and freedom. How many times have you heard complete avowed politicians who are absolute fascist socialists invoke the Constitution that they might as well be wiping their ass with while they're doing it? It happens all the time. You have people that hate the Constitution. They invoke it the minute that they think it benefits them to do so. We are a society so divorced from liberty, we have no right to even use the word as a collective anymore. We don't. None. We actually now believe that freedom is forcing others to comply with what we want. Again, I know a lot of you in this audience, you're like, no, I don't, Jack. I'm not talking about you. You're not your problem. Well, in some ways you are. We're about to turn a corner and get to that. But as to this issue, you're not your problem. You're not your problem. Other people are. Specifically people with power. Right? So, and the problem is that those people exist so that we are all tempted, like that moderator of an internet community, to go, this person didn't break any rules. But God, they're disruptive. God, I don't like what they're doing. All I have to do is click a button and they'll go away. It's the same thing. All I have to do is call 911. I'll call my attorney. I'll call the inspections office for property inspections, whatever it is. I'll take this action that once I take that action, I can step back and I don't have to do anything, even give my name, and I can cause this problem for somebody. I mean, think about something that seems different, but it's really not, because it's the same mechanism. It's just a different motivation. Think about the fact that people are swatted regularly today. I mean, how many prominent YouTubers, especially if they're really political, unlike me, right? They're always political, like a Tim, whatever his name is, Tim, the Timcast guy or something like that, have been swatted while live streaming. We see this happen constantly. These cops just show up with guns full on, like ready to kick doors in and shit. Freaking canine units, the whole nine yards, because one person made one fucking phone call. Yeah, Tim Pool, that's the guy. That's the guy. Mr. Hathead. What do you call those hats? Beanie Hathead, right? The little snow skiing hat. He's wearing it all the time. I don't know how people wear those hats. I don't like them to begin with. The one thing I'll say for them is they're warm, but how you wear that hat in the summertime indoors, bro, I don't know. But the fact that you can SWAT somebody tells you we have a problem. Without giving your name, without giving any further information, you know, they're in there cooking drugs or they have 12 people hostage or whatever. I'm sorry, cops. If you're going back to the same place multiple times being swatted, you're stupid. I mean, there's one guy I saw on X last week. He was like, this is the fifth time we've been swatted. I don't know who's doing it to him. He doesn't look like he's a real big online personality or anything. Somebody doesn't like him. Like, you can't just keep going. Like, but the fact that you can tells you we have a problem. It tells you that we do not respect freedom and liberty. You'd want some, before you roll dudes with guns out in force, you'd want some confirmation that something was legitimately going on before you did it. People have had their dogs shot over this. I saw one video. I was so angry. I had to take a walk because I'm going to have a friggin' aneurysm. My blood pressure was so high where this guy is telling the cops there's nothing in there. My dog's in there. The dog barks. Don't shoot my dog. The cops go in and shoot his dog. All I'll say is, bro, you better not do that to my dogs. I'm just saying. Like, I'm not saying what's going to happen. I'm just saying that would be a really bad idea for you to kill a member of my family because that is how I would view it, you know? So how can we fight this? What do we do? Do we just sit here and bitch about this, or is there something we can actually do? So first of all, we are dealing with a beast, the largest beast that's ever existed, funded by an unlimited ability to print money, of which the consequences are only really being felt fully now, which means the apparatus they built with it works. Okay? We have the largest beast. Like, the beast of the Book of Revelations ain't got shit on the beast that is the federal government of the United States and what they can actually do to somebody when they decide to do it. So, how do you defeat a beast that big? Can you get your sword and run up to it and stab it in the heart because you're Lancelot the Brave and kill it? No. I've always said the ballot is a fool's errand, right? The ballot is a fool's errand and the rifle is a death sentence. Like, in this current situation we're in, there is no direct attacking the beast. How do you kill the beast? How do you kill the beast? 10,000, if not 10 million paper cuts. Little tiny injuries. Little tiny injuries. There's giant animals that get, you know, gangrene and die from one thorn in their paw they can't get out. A lion can be taken out by a thorn. What about 1,000 thorns? 10,000 thorns? 10 million thorns? This is how we have to fight the beast. Little actions in our own lives that make us concerned less with what they're doing. And spreading the word to others so the others see all their power comes from us. I know you don't believe that because you don't want to believe that we're that bad. But it is a government for the people, by the people, and of the people. But in the words of one, I guess now deceased, famous religious scam artist guru who got at least one thing right in the 1980s, but the people are retarded, right? The government for the people, of the people, by the people, but the people are retarded. You know what I'm talking about if you've seen the video. But it is a reflection of society. So you have to change society to change the beast, or at least you have to weaken the beast by changing society. So you do that with thousands of paper cuts. So that means we need to teach each other about liberty. That means having discussions like the one that we're having right now. Like, to ask somebody, what does liberty mean to you? Stop telling people what things mean to them, because this is what happens. There's two things that happens when you tell somebody what something's supposed to mean to them, and it doesn't mean that to them, at least not yet. One is you create resistance. I used to do a thing in sales training. I would just pick a random person from the group when I'd be training a group of salespeople. And I'd say, I want you to do whatever I tell you to do. And they'd say, okay. And you tell them to stand up. And they stand up. You say, put your hand up like this. And they put their hand up like you're going to swear on the Bible with your right hand. So you got your right hand raised, right? Now, remember what I said. Do whatever I tell you to do. Okay? And I never did something like, you know, stick your thumb in your butt and run around with your arm training to be a elephant, right? Like, I never did anything mean to anybody. I just say, do what I ask you to do, and they would do that. And then I would walk up to them with my own hand raised the same way, and I would push their hand. I would push their hand. 9 out of 10 times. It always sucked when somebody was, like, I guess the guy that always won Simon Says as a kid, right? You'd go to push his hand, and he'd just completely let you, right? But 9 times out of 10, as soon as you push, they would push back, and that's what I was looking for. Right. And if somebody did let me push, I'd have somebody else stand up. The second person would always resist. Like, I got it wrong. I never said they got it wrong. I said, thank you. And I went on to you. Resistance. When you push, you naturally get resistance. When you tell somebody that something they don't want to hear, you naturally get resistance. And like my episode on sales last week, what are you looking for in this discussion? Someone to become receptive. So you don't get receptive people by telling them what they're supposed to think. You get people to be receptive by getting them to tell you what they think you should listen to. And you listen. So we have to teach each other about liberty by having these questions asked. Like, what is liberty and freedom mean to you? What does that mean? What does it look like? Do you think we can have total freedom? Why or why not? Don't worry about what you think. Explain what you mean by that. And if they give you a definition that sounds very, very good, say, well, give me some examples of things where that would clearly be violated and we need to do something about it. Like, if somebody tries to kill somebody, obviously you violated their right to life. So that's something that we would need to have some sort of force to prevent. Give me some other things. And when they give you a stupid one, because sooner or later they will if you have this conversation long enough, you say, but how is the person that you just said needs to be interfered with harming anybody else? Have they broken the rule you gave me? What do you think about that? Well, what do we do in that situation? These are the conversations we need to be having. And we have to do them as political atheists. Now, look, I do not expect you to turn into me. I really don't give a shit who the next president is. If you say to me, Jack, be pragmatic, look at the two candidates, and it is two candidates, and it is the two that they say it is, and nothing's going to change unless somebody gets shot, okay? It's Kamala or Orange Man. Who would be better for the country as a whole? Orange Man. Doesn't mean that I care, because the larger macro turning that we're in right now, this fourth turning that we're in, is going to turn, no matter who's in charge. But I don't expect you to agree with me on that. What I'm saying is, for the purpose of these discussions, you must be a political atheist. You have to talk about the principle, the ideal, and the concept without dragging politics into it. And you have to be skillful in that conversation to not let the other side do it. When they all of a sudden say, well, Trump, oh, hold on, I'm not talking about Trump or Kamala. I know that's unusual. I know that's very hard to believe, given the situation we sit in today. But I'm not asking you about the election. I don't vote, or I do vote, or whatever, but whoever I vote for is not going to matter, or the fact that I don't vote shouldn't matter here. I'm asking you about this thing, this issue. What do you think about the issue by itself? This is very hard for people to do. It's very hard for people to do, and it shouldn't be. It should be as natural as, you know, I don't know, when you wake up in the morning stretching. You know, most people don't stretch enough, but I think most people, when you get out of bed or when before you get out of bed, like once you wake up, you kind of, like there's just a natural inclination. Like if my muscles that haven't been moving for 8 hours are going to move now, I need to get them ready. I'm going to stretch. So it should be very natural to talk about an issue independent of other people. What do you think should happen for this thing? How should this problem be addressed? How should it be solved? And how could it be solved without taking from people who don't want to be taken from? But I got to tell you, that Kamala Harris, she's going to – see, I don't care. The last person objected to Trump, next person – I don't care about Kamala Harris, and I don't care about Donald Trump. I care about this thing. Let's talk about this thing. Tell me what you think about this thing, because what you'll find, it takes effort. It takes effort, but once you get people talking about the thing, in the end, most people agree about the core concept of the thing. Now, if it was healthcare, they might say, well, it's a right. Okay, then how do we provide it to people without stealing from other people who don't want to be stolen from? Well, see, we need national. I asked you a question. Is there any way you could come up with at all where we could make sure that everybody had access to healthcare without stealing from somebody? At least anybody who was willing to do the most remote amount of self-preservation, like there could be the least amount of autonomy. Like, obviously, we need a thing for people who are mentally incapable of looking after themselves, who are whatever, right? But a person who physically could put any effort into their own life, how can we make sure anybody's willing to do at least that can have health care? Don't look for me to the answer here, guys. I want to know from you. What do you think? That's the conversation to have about that one. And that's a hard one. A lot of other ones are way easier than that. See, because my response initially would be, if you tell me people have a right to health care, that means you have a right to the services and labor of another person against their will. That's not a thing. Because with rights, it's party and counterparty both, right? The guy who went to medical school that sacrificed and suffered for all those years, 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 1 year of residency, right? Or 1 year of internship, and then 2 to 7 years of residency. And he spent $500,000 or more that he owes money on to become that doctor, that surgeon who can take your kidney out and put another one in and you won't die. He has fucking rights too, doesn't he? Doesn't that man have rights, or that woman have rights, or that trans surgeon have rights, right? Doesn't that person who took the time and the effort to hone their skills and the cost, the expense, and the sacrifice, doesn't that person have a right to say, I don't want to operate on you for free? right? Okay, but we're going to pay them. Well, how are you going to pay them? We're going to take money from the rich. The person that worked really hard to earn the money, don't they have a right to their property? See, and everybody's going to want to do is turn it back. The minute you hear a politician's name, the name of a bill, anything like that, you say, I don't want to talk about politics. I want to talk about what solution is there outside of politics. Like, even if you were going to take it into politics, why don't we find a solution first and see what that solution is and how that would work? What would that look like? Because as long as people are inside a building and they believe that building is their house, they will defend it. They'll defend it. There's a team ideology in this that's very strong, a tribal ideology that's very strong. If you've ever been on a sports team, you know who the worst player on the team is. You know the guy who you give shit to in the locker room, right? You're lucky they don't cut you, Eddie, right? You're lucky. You slack off one bit, coach is going to cut you, and he's going to bring my sister on the team in your spot, right? Shit like that happens. What happens especially high school level where that tribalism is really, with all the cliques, really up in front? What happens when that person who is that player on the football team, the basketball team, whatever, is told, you suck, by somebody that's not on the team? What immediately happens? Like, the superstar jocks are all like, hey, bitch, I didn't see you at practice Saturday. You leave him the fuck alone, right? That's instantly what happens. Now, there's a dynamic involved there. That person has earned, even if they're the last person on the team, they earn their spot, and they do the work to stay there, and they try really hard, and they're part of it. So there's a point to that. They've convinced you that your Democrat Party or your Republican Party or your Conservative Party or your Libertarian Party or whatever is that house to be defended. And so you can talk shit about it all you want, but God help somebody who's talking shit about it from the outside. And what's even worse, when somebody else on the inside starts talking shit in those political spaces, right? If some kid who shot some pedophile who tried to kill him with a skateboard dare say, I don't think I'm going to vote for Trump because I'm not sure he's strong enough on the Second Amendment. We must slaughter him. If you missed that this weekend, I didn't pay attention to it, but that happened. To the point where that kid's like, oh, I changed my mind. I'm back on the team again, because he couldn't handle being attacked like that. That type of tribalism is crazy. And you will never find solutions when people are being that irrational, because you need logic and rational thought to solve complex problems. Well, doesn't it strike you that they've created a system that absolutely abolishes rational thought, logic, fact, and reason from discussion? In fact, what is the move of the state, the media, the oligarchy? What is their primary move when they take a side that is not defendable by fact, logic, and reason, and people start to present fact, logic, and reason in opposition? What do? Because they have the power to do so. Censor and ban. Isn't that what happened with COVID? Right? Here's a doctor. Oh, how about this one? Here's a researcher that's been cited so many times. He's literally one of the most cited researchers that's still alive in the research papers of other scientists. He's a PhD, an MD, and a DSC. And he comes out with an opinion on a drug called hydroxychloroquine, and he must be silenced. He was a genius yesterday, but today he brought facts, logic, and reason to something inconvenient to the state, the oligarchy, and the narrative, so we must shun him and destroy him. So the only way you're going to be able to have that conversation with your buddy, your friend, your uncle, your nephew, your sister, your brother, your aunt, your uncle, is you have to take politics out of it. Uncle Steve, I'm just actually really interested in, how would you fix this problem? If you had complete control over everything, what would you do? And then challenge only on the principles where you're, well, isn't that stealing to take from that person who doesn't want to be taken from? Is there any way? Well, I understand you ain't figured it out yet, but is there any way this could be solved without stealing? Use that word. I know that's a hot charge word, but it's less charged than Democrat or Republican, I promise you. You have to stick to principles, avoid people and policies, and you have to find the pain points and discuss them. The best discussions you'll ever have with changing people toward the world of liberty are talking to them about the things that impact them personally, that they feel the pain from, that they already have kind of figured out how they could solve it, because usually they'll figure out where the state's in the way. The state is in the way of this for me. Now, there are people that literally want everything handed to them. They're not ready for this discussion. You remember last week I talked about sales? Like, this is a sales game. Everything in life is a sales game. So you have three categories that prospects go into. Probably, possibly, and never. And when you get to a never, cut fucking bait, man. Go fish and be done. Like, just, there's no point. If that person continuously turns a conversation that's principle and fact-based back to politics and people and personality and tribe, that's a never. I don't think I want to have this discussion anymore, Uncle Steve. I wanted to talk about the prop. You want to talk about this person. I don't really care about this person. I don't think that person's going to help us. I don't think they're going to do what they say they're going to do. If they do what they say they're going to do, I think that's even worse. So I don't want to talk about them. If you ever want to talk about this thing again, let me know. Bye. Just like the sales show, right? You also have to discuss how others feel about different issues. Like I said, when somebody says, well, all we have to do is take from this group to give to that group, well, how do you think the people you're taking from feel? How do you think they got to where they are? And when Uncle Steve, who's a lifetime Democrat, right, says, well, them rich fellers, you know, they're in control of everything. Well, wait a minute. Do you think the people in control are going to let you take from the people in control? So you're not really talking about taking from them, are you, Uncle Steve? You're talking about people who've simply done better than you and I, but they're not one of them either. They're the guy that lives down the road in a house that's, you know, twice as big as our house. Why? Don't you think, and maybe he knows, like, especially if you know somebody by name that would fit into that, do you really think Paul should actually have to have more taken from him? And do you think if we take from Paul, it's really going to fix your problem? Well, see, the Democrat, Democrats, no bill, no Congress, no red state, blue state, none of that shit. I want to talk about the problem. Because then we're going to always come back to the same place. The obstacle in getting what you want quickly without your own consorted effort going into it is what? To steal. It always comes down to stealing. If your idea is so good that it really will benefit everybody, you might be surprised how many people would willingly participate in it. Right now, this fucking country is so stupid, we are about to start a fucking war with Iran. I mean, we are way closer than even I thought we would be last week when I talked about this on Thursday. We have carrier groups, we have battleships, we have all kinds of shit all over the Middle East right now. We've got them in the Mediterranean. We got them in the Red Sea, we got them in the Persian Gulf, and we got them at the mouths of the Red Sea and the Persian Gulf. We're ready to go full-scale kick-ass on Iran because Israel attacked Iran, and now Iran says we're going to attack Israel, so we have to defend Israel. I'm back to the conversation that we've had many times about this being like sending a freaking asshole guy who knows he's going to get his ass beat to a bar. He goes in that bar, even though he's an asshole, he's going to keep his mouth shut. He's not going to start any trouble. But give him two big goons. I mean big goons, like 6'8", like WWF-style wrestler-looking guys. Like, who were those dudes back in the 80s? This huge hawking animal? The Road Warriors, right? You give him two goons like those guys in their prime, and you send him into a bar, and he's an asshole. How long is it going to be before he gets in a fight? Not very long, is it? Because when you take the weaker party, but you give them your backing, they know that if they start the fight, you will defend them. That's what's going on there. This is not a foreign policy discussion either. We have caused all this shit to happen. Everything we have touched in the Middle East, we have made worse. But we continue to prop up weaker states and say, if you touch them, we'll kick your ass. We will defend them. Well, what does that do? It emboldens them to be more reckless and more aggressive than they would otherwise be and to seek less diplomacy. And I know somebody wants to bring up October 7th. I get it. I understand. Horrible thing. But how much flesh do you take back from somebody before you've gone over the edge? I'll leave it to you to decide on that. There's my position. Who's right and who's wrong? I don't know. Maybe the people fighting should figure that out. Maybe they should have to work that out. If they want to fight with each other, they want to kill each other, maybe they should. I don't know. But I know I don't want to involve myself in their fight. I don't want to stick my hand into the hornet's nest while it's being attacked by the other hornets, right? Or the beehive is being attacked by the murder hornets. I'm not sticking my hand in there. I might even be on the side of the bees. But if I'm going to interfere at all, they better be my bees. And another nation's not our nation. It's pretty simple to understand if you want to. But once you've had this conversation with somebody, you know what you need to do? Same thing I said in the sales show. Shut up and leave. It's paper cuts. It's little Nick. Ow, whatever. But over time, 1,000, 1,000,000 paper cuts has an effect. And when you talk to someone, you have a discussion like this, let me tell you, the odds that they've ever had a discussion like this with anybody else are not real high. They're not real high that they've ever had a discussion like this. It's kind of like when you actually apologize to someone the way you should apologize, it often takes a while for them to accept your apology and realize there's not another shoe dropping. This is a typical way that there's an apology. Let's say me and Kelly had an argument. I say, Kelly, I'm sorry that I was an asshole to you, but you did this other thing which made me an asshole in the first place. We call that blame shifting. So when I tell Kelly here, Kelly, I was an asshole, I was out of line, and I'm sorry, and I shut up, it's very natural that Kelly might be like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm still mad. I'm going to go away. The best thing for me to do is let Kelly go away. I've now delivered a sincere apology, right? Yeah. I'm sorry that you got it. Kelly's participating now. I'm sorry that you got upset, but your apology should not sound like a politician's apology, right? I'm sorry that others were harmed, right? I'm sorry that people felt uncomfortable. No. I'm sorry I did this thing. If you didn't do a thing, don't apologize, right? But when you give that kind of apology, it's usually like a day or two later that person, if they're a reasonable, rational person that you should have a relationship with in the first place, they come back and say, look, man, I had a place in this too, and I'm sorry. See, when you apologize to somebody, you're acknowledging what you did wrong. You don't need to tell them what they did wrong. If they're worth having a relationship with going forward, they'll figure that out for themselves. Okay. So when you apologize, you expect nothing in return. Not it's okay. Not I'm sorry too. Not I forgive you. You apologize and you shut up. This works the same way. We talk about an issue. We get as many things as we can in agreement as to like, well, this would all be better than what we have. Okay. Think about that. If you ever want to talk about this again, let me know. How about them Broncos? I mean, whatever ends it. I got to go now. Whatever. Because what you've done, you planted a seed. And this is a problem. People put a seed in the ground and they scream grow. Put an apple seed in the ground and you're wanting to pick an apple tomorrow. You're not even going to see a green leaf tomorrow. Nothing there. Come back in a week and you see a little tiny plant that's very fragile and can be destroyed very easily. And when you keep pushing, when you've opened Uncle Steve's eyes a little bit, and Uncle Steve's starting to realize, wait a minute, maybe this bullshit from the Republicans or bullshit from the Democrats I've heard my whole life is actually bullshit, at least on this one thing. Maybe my nephew Larry here is actually kind of smart. I should think about it. And Larry comes back and says, I told you, Uncle Steve, snap, you killed the little tree before it got a chance to grow. Shut up, walk away, let it grow. And this is reality. I don't care what form of government this country has. I don't care who we elect. I don't care if we elect the image, the doppelganger of, from a practical standpoint, to a supermajority in both houses and the White House of like Rand and Ron Paul and Thomas Massie. right? People that legitimately are way more for freedom than anything we've seen in our adult lives. Like, supermajority, and everything is getting better. The majority of people in this country will still not be free. They will still not be free. See, if you're judging freedom based on the masses, like the communists, because we already had discussed, like, that is literally Marxist and Stalinist philosophy. You judge emancipation based on how free the mass is. Then you don't know what freedom is. You can't define freedom. If you can't define freedom, you can't define it for yourself, and therefore you cannot have it. You cannot be free if you don't know what freedom for you is. See, the real problem here is if I take 10 people and say you are totally free to do anything you want at all, including nothing. You're free to sit there and try to photosynthesize the sunlight instead of work for a living like a plant. Or you're free to go out and build a multi-billion-dollar corporation and to invent the next great invention, to do anything you want. You have the freedom to do it as long as you don't harm another person. Once we, like, resuscitated you because you actually believed it and you didn't faint anymore when you realized how incredible it was, and I said, okay, now what are you going to do? All 10 of you are going to be totally different answers. All 10 of you are going to give you, like, one of you is going to go out and create a cancer drug. You're actually going to get it done because there's going to be no bullshit in the way to getting it done. You're going to be able to go out and raise money from people that actually believe in what you're doing without any interference, and you're going to make that drug. If it's possible, you're going to do it. And some of you are going to sit there and try to be a plant and eventually realize that's not going to work, and you're going to go do something. Hello, welcome to Walmart. Here's your cart. Whatever it is. Welcome to Costco. I love you. What, you're going to do something. And some are going to go out and build a wonderful homestead. Some are going to go out and start making food and selling it to their neighbors. Some are just going to go about their lives the way they pretty much always were because it's what they really wanted. But they're all going to do something different with that freedom and liberties are given. Now, how in the hell are you going to get a society to be free when the individuals do not even realize that fundamental reality that liberty and freedom is different as manifested by every individual? Have you ever even heard somebody other than me tell you that? You may have. I'm not the only one. But we are the infinitesimally small minority of people that would tell you that. That freedom is different for every person in its manifestation. In other words, what is the output of your freedom? It will be different. It will be different. With that, let's go ahead and wrap up. I think we've gone on long enough today on that. I do have a few questions and comments. If you have one and you don't see it in the three that I'm about to do, go ahead and do it now here at the end. Put the word question in all caps the way you see Builder of Castles there, and then put your question, your comment after it, and I'll try to hit everybody before we sign off. Builder says, the trolley problem, a question that just breaks your mind. Choose a bad outcome A or bad outcome B, and the real solutions are disallowed. Okay, that's interesting. I don't know if that's a question, but what he's talking about, if you've ever seen this, is where you have – like the train's coming on the tracks, and you're the guy with the switch, and you can switch the tracks. And if you switch the tracks one way, it rolls over one person, but if you switch the tracks the other way, it rolls over three people. And I guess if you were really stuck with that decision, it's better to save three than one, but do you have all the information? What if it's three pedophiles, right, and just one normal person? Saving the one normal person, right? But what's the real solution? Stop the fucking train. Right? Hit the brakes. But you're not allowed. And it's a scenario set up, a binary choice in a universe with infinite options. Why is everything always broken down to the Democrat solution and the Republican solution? Why? And almost anybody that looks at either of them with a critical eye goes, well, that's wrong. That's fucked up. That's not going to work. That's going to fail. Oh, maybe I'll do the other one. Oh, that's all fucked up too. Why? Because it's a great way to control people. I've said this before, but it's true. If you want to anger the masses, take no position or take an independent position. Either one of those will enrage people. Like, if you're like Trump or Harris, You want to see people get pissed off? So I'm going to vote for RFK. Now, I'll admit, when you say that to me, my thing is, dude can't win. You're pissing up a rope. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I'm just pointing out the mathematical reality here. I was told recently it is un-American for me to tell people that if they vote for RFK, they're pissing in the wind. That's un-American, and it's the person actually said it was fascist. So I'm like, so now the truth is fascist? I don't even hate the guy. There's some things I really like about the guy. But he ain't going to win, and we all know that. He knows that. He knows that 100. Like, there's no way this man thinks he's going to. He can do math, right? Well, that makes him mad. I'm going to do RFK. Oh, waste your vote. Okay. You want to get really mad? I'm not voting. Oh, my God. Wailing, gnashing of teeth, freaking scraping the freaking ceiling loose. I mean, just nuts. I'm never voting for any of these people ever again. Then they go freaking crazy, rent asunder, right? And it's the same with issues. Because everything's come down to the Pepsi challenge, right? Pepsi or Coke. I'm going to drink water. No, you can't do that. But that is, but why? Why? Because binary is a great way to control society. You have to be with us or against us. And you can be with us or with us, right? Side A or B, and you're still with us. Let's call it side C in the end, America. But if you are opposed to A and B, you must be opposed to C. It's nuts. But it is a perfect mechanism of control. Larry says, I have always viewed it as a nation giving up freedoms for perceived convenience or security. Yes, it's exactly what it is. I want my life to be convenient. I want it to be secure. I don't want to worry about anything. And, you know, one of the places that they can leverage that a lot is somebody think of the children. But as bad as it is, when you use that leverage point, the thing about that is the people that are thinking of their own children, their kids, their grandchildren, right? If you're lucky, your great-grandchildren, you get to see born. You're also thinking of the future. And I think people that have children tend to put a lot more thought into the world after they're gone than people who don't. I'm not putting people that are childless down. I'm just telling you, as a father and a grandfather, I think more about the future than I would if I was a 52-year-old dude with no kids. I think about it more. It matters to me more because when I'm gone, people that I really love and cherish will still be here. And they will have children who will look back to me and say, what did this man ever do for us? Who was he? That matters to me. But when you and you can use it for a lot of evil. Anything that's true can be used for evil, right? Because if it's really the case that, like, oh, my God, the children, well, we can get you to sign off on all kinds of bullshit. But where it really goes sideways, when the average person is out just for their own security, their own safety, their own convenience, and that self-centered mindset. And we have, I mean, say what you want about J.D. Vance being weird, right? But when he said we're being run by childless cat women, I agree that was a dumb political statement. It doesn't mean it isn't right. Especially if you let that be a metaphor, right? The childless cat lady living on Franzia box wine is got immense political power in society today because there's so many of them, and they're miserable. All these people that – you ever notice that? The people that are all for the biggest government possible, that tell you all the ways your life could be better if you just listen to them, are they not the most miserable human beings? And I don't mean that you don't like what they say. I mean, if you just look at them, like, they're on psych medications. They have clinically diagnosed mental disorders. They're using suicidal language. Every picture of them, they look like they just ate dirt. Why would you want to join them? I mean, misery loves company, but company doesn't love misery, is what I'm saying there. But yeah, it's definitely drilling it down to that binary choice and telling people, if you want to be comfortable, all we have to do is make this person uncomfortable and you'll feel better. Larry also said, it doesn't help that our country blames shifts everything. And we never actually take responsibility for messing up the lives of everyone else. Yeah, we don't. That's kind of my discussion on apologies. So I won't dig much more into that. But that is what we do as a society. We blame shift. We never admit we were wrong. Has anybody come out from our government and said, yeah, we totally fucked up in Afghanistan? The reason we ended up with a disastrous withdrawal under Brandon is because we maybe should have never been there in the first place. Or if we said we were there to get bin Laden, the day we got bin Laden, we should have begun removing ourselves from the situation. Or again, maybe we should have just not done it in the first place. Has anybody admitted how fucked up Iraq is today after we fixed it? Have we admitted to anything? Have we admitted to how fucked up Egypt is now? Have we admitted how fucked up Libya is? We came, we saw, he died. What difference does it even make now? It makes a lot of difference. We fucked it up. What has your government fucked up in the last 30 years? I bet you if I ask the average person, what has the government fucked up in the last 30 years? I'll have to shut them up. I'll have to, 27 is enough, Frank. Lay off. We've had enough from you. You're right. They fucked all that up. Okay, now, what on that list has anybody in your government been accountable for? Nothing. I mean, the fucking Secret Service just near got the head of Donald Trump blown off due to complete incompetence. I'm telling you, you could have put a group of Eagle Scouts in charge of that op, and they would have done a better job than the Secret Service did. Nobody's been held accountable yet. What's her name? Secret Service Karen, right? She resigned after she got the shit ripped out of her. That was just opportunistic politicians grandstanding. That wasn't accountability. The head of the organization choosing to leave by themselves and probably getting some big-time job from somebody in return for that's not accountability. The number two guy's in charge now. He's the acting director, right? He's the acting director. He was in charge when she was in charge. You don't get an organization that big and a dude that far up, and it didn't have a lot of influence on where. So he fucked up. Who's been fired? Who's been? Nobody. Freaking Pentagon loses $9 billion. Who got fired? Nobody. We gave $6 billion to Ukraine by accident. Who got fired? Nobody. So what have we ever done wrong and said, yeah, we fucked that up? Nothing. And as leadership goes, so does rank and file. I'm so sick of this shit too, right? Well, it's not the rank and file. It's not the men and women out there every day giving their best. It's leadership. Leadership leads and fucking rank and file follows. If there is a cancer in the head of the snake, the whole snake will die, right? Did the camel's nose is in the tent? Soon the whole camel will be in the tent too. It just is what it is. Let me see if there's anything that, okay. Comment, shorter list would be things they haven't screwed up, Roger says. I agree. I don't think there'd be much on that list. The things they haven't screwed up are only the things they haven't touched. And isn't that an interesting thought, though, from Roger? Maybe the reason we viewed our government as more competent, let's say in 1965, because we did. Like, trust in government was huge in 1965. We were at one of the heights of America's most glorious, triumphant eras. Like, the poor people that worked in unskilled trades made enough money to buy a house in 1965. Yeah? Right? And we thought we had a lot of faith in government from, like, the post-war period up until the stagflation of the 1970s. The average person in this country had immense respect for the federal government of the United States. Maybe the only reason they did wasn't just because we'd come out of World War II and all the usual reasons. Maybe it was simply because they touched less. And in touching less, they fucked less shit up, so they looked more competent. Maybe it's as simple as that. Okay. I'm looking. I don't see any more questions or comments from anybody, so we'll wrap up. Real quick here at the end, I want to remind you guys, if you like the show and the work that we do, you can always help us out by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is from Amazon, and it is a really cool one, and it's been around forever in the T-Spaz catalog. And something has happened recently that I don't really know what's going on. But I've seen this pattern before, and it's always been that the product goes away when this pattern happens. A vendor has a product that they're the only one that has it. They never discount it. All of a sudden, it goes on sale, and it goes out of inventory. It comes back, and it goes on sale, and it goes out of inventory. And it comes back, and it goes on sale, and it goes out of inventory. And eventually, what has, you know, almost always happened, not always, but almost always happened, is that product eventually just becomes unavailable. And you get that message on Amazon, we don't know when or if this will be back in stock, and it never is. Like the Red Yeti Wear shears that I used to recommend that you can't get anymore. This is an end grain wood bamboo cutting board, and it literally is the only thing out there of its quality at its price point at $65. And it's on sale for like $43 right now. It normally sells for $65. I've been recommending it at that price forever. And the builder says the vendor gets a new shipment from China. Yeah, but again, this is not an item that there's like 10 versions of from 10 different companies. This is one company that clearly is having this product made this way. And it probably, being it's bamboo, it probably is from China. But it is an incredible cutting board. I have tons of cool-looking cutting boards and stuff like that, but this is my workhorse. This is my go-to. I have had this thing for like 6-7 years now, and it doesn't miss a beat. It's easy to maintain, easy to take care of. And Tom, my web guy Tom, says, yeah, I bought a second one the last time. And what Tom said, you tell me if I'm lying, Tom. There it is right there. You already said it. Things cut so nice on it. It is. It is the way it's designed with the end grain up like the bristles on a dartboard. There's a performance you get on a well-made cutting board that you just don't get on a shitty one. And I'll tell you what you never want. You never want to buy a cutting board that is not end grain, that is bamboo. If you're going to do that, just take your knife outside and start rubbing it on the sidewalk. Bamboo is harder than most wood. It's incredibly hard. That's why it's such a great building material, and it's incredibly regenerative. You can cut down a giant bamboo cane, and it will replace itself in half of a season once that plant's established, the rhizome's well pushed out, and it's sending shoots up quickly. Massively regenerative forever. Like it's grass. It's like mowing grass. It grows back. It just grows really, 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 really tall. But it's very hard. This way they put this board together, and I've looked at dozens of them, because every time this thing's gone, I'm like, shit, I have to have a product like this in my catalog. Like, as much as I talk about cooking, I have to have a good cutting board. And I'm either like, buy this shitty one or spend $200 on this end grain, you know, really expensive like Kobe Blocks board or something like that, because there's nothing in the middle. And everything I've found that sort of looks like this isn't. And when you read the reviews, it isn't. Like, if you wash this when you're done with it and you let it dry and set water sitting on top of it and you oil it once a month, it'll probably outlive you. So if you need a good cutting board in your kitchen, get this one while you can, because I'm not just selling here. I really don't know. I am shocked that this thing showed back up today. I really am. Like, it showed up on I use Camel to watch price on everything in my catalog, and it popped up. I'm like, holy shit, it's back. Because last time I ran it, there was like 10 in stock. They sold out. Then there was like one in stock, and I didn't even run it. I went on the Telegram list and said, hey, this thing, somebody bought it, and then it went back up in inventory, and then it went sold out again. And so I don't know what's going on. All I know is if you want one, get one while you can. With that, let's get wrapped up. I want to remind you guys again, I'm going to be on tomorrow with Dr. Ken Berry at 1 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Feed yourself or suffer. And what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about producing food for yourself off your own property and building community and doing it. Exactly what angle, what I have no idea what the hell Ken's going to ask me. I kind of know the way I want to take the conversation, but I really don't know where it's going to go, because I'm in the hot seat this time instead of the guy asking the questions. I'm also going to be on in the morning, 9:30 Central Daylight Time, with Nicole Awesome Sauce and John Tactical Willis, and we'll be talking about all kinds of crazy shit. I will catch you then, and then we'll have, I think I have right here. No, I do not. I do not have my Wednesday interview in front of me, so I can't tell you who it is. I'll let you know tomorrow. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.